Blog Talk Radio.
Getting our share. Welcome this evening. You're listening to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen. In Studio B, we have Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you, sir?
Don, excellent, excellent. Mr. Edwards from the left, my colleague Don Allen from the right. That's the
yes,
way
sir.
It is
yes,
here
sir.
in the land of honey and cream, if you will.
The good
getting our peace, if you will. Looks like things are great for the African American community economically, Don. Coming off
of
last week's program, a lot of money, I assume, getting ready to come in for employment and contracts and et cetera for the Viking Stadium, right?
Yeah, the Viking Stadium, the training, you know, getting pulling these guys up by their bootstraps and getting them in for training to work on the Viking Stadium, the beautiful glass menagerie.
Yes, it is. It is.
Yes.
It is a Taj Mahal, if you will. No, just no doubt about it. I guess there's been some movement with regards to that. But why don't we just do this, Don? Why don't we just deal with the 9-year-old African American child who a judge today, though the young man, the 9-year-old, was not in the courtroom. A judge has ordered that he be put in, like, protective custody for at least a month, and that also the parents take therapeutic courses in parenting and et cetera here in the Twin Cities. How do you read that, Don? Do you think that this family will ever see their son again?
Well, I think they will, because their attorney, class of 1980, Minneapolis Central High, and a friend of mine, Bob Pauly, is on the case. He don't play that. Okay?
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Bob does not, Mr. Pauly, attorney, counsel Pauly, does not take this kind of stuff lightly. And if you look at his career as defending, being a criminal defense attorney for probably 25, 30 years now in the Twin Cities.
Wait a minute, but you seem to be pretty high on him. You know, you're kind of bouncing off the trampoline here. Now, what has been his experience in juvenile court? Because there's a lot of difference between adult court and juvenile court. So how many cases, to the best of your knowledge, has this gentleman handled in the juvenile court system? Because that's
handled,
where this case is at.
Yeah, I can't give you the number, but I know he's handled a number of cases where a child was involved in the family and a child that had not seen any abuse, and that the county stepped in and said, hey, we need to do this, this, and that. He is he is an advocate against giving these minority ethnic children in the community this Ritalin and these pharmaceuticals because they might act bad. And he always explains to me, Mr. Edwards, that, you know, we went to Minneapolis Central, and if these people were now back in Minneapolis Central, then we would have all been on Thorazine. Okay. And so, I mean, I think he has a good chance of doing. I'm really high on him because I think he'll do the right thing and actually help the 9-year-old, who is actually a genius. Despite what the mainstream media is making him into, he's actually a genius, getting on an airplane, flying from here to passing through the billion-dollar TSA gate and getting on a billion-dollar airline, Delta Airlines, and going to, you know, Las Vegas without a ticket or a suitcase, luggage.
Okay.
So,
So you have – you're rather reasonably confident that that this youngster would at some point in time – be returned to his parents, or do you think that there will be a petition to put him into the system? I mean, what do you think there, Don?
Well, I think there's going to be a petition to try to put him in the system because, you know, he's suspended from the Minneapolis Public Schools, and the judge has ordered a kinship study, which evaluates the relatives, neighbors, and other significant figures in the boy's life as possible future guardians, you know. So, but see, the thing is, Mr. Edwards, in this case, we have to look at the child has not seen any, you know, abuse in his home. And this was actually written by Rochelle Olson, who will be in a class of mine tomorrow talking to us about news. And I plan on bringing this story, this half-assed written story, up to her and talking about this. But, you know, it was an embarrassment to Delta. It was an embarrassment to TSA. It was an embarrassment to a lot of folks. And I think that the county's being pressured by certain point people in those organizations to kind of, you know, make an example out of this young man, where in fact...
Okay, well, we said that on last week's program, an entire week before a Hennepin County juvenile judge made his or her ruling this morning with respect to disposition of this 9-year-old African-American child. Don, let me just ask you this question, I mean, from the left, if you will, to the right. How much do you think that race played a role here?
Oh, no. Now, see, if this would have been a white child, you would have had TMZ, the World Book of Guinness, up here. He would have been on all the talk shows. Well, how did you do it? You know, how did this happen? And I think race played a major role here, but what they're trying to do is criminalize this young kid, you know, and they just everything. Oh, he got kicked out of school. He's
just
aggressive
a bad
behavior.
Seed, a bad apple, bad person.
Yes, okay.
Typical of the, well, really, of the African-American race, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he fits the profile, has, you know, an animal, uncivilized person.
Predator, yes.
And it's really funny because race plays a big role in this, but, you know, if you want to look at the hypocrisy of this, you know, if you look back 2008 to 2009 when a handful of white dudes lost $12 trillion in the banking system, and no one said anything about that.
Well, we don't. Even on the left, we don't go there. By the way, phone number, telephone lines are open as it pertains to this pending case, a case of illegal, I guess you'd call it illegal travel across the country under color of law. Number is 347-426-3904. Again, 347-426-3904. This is Ronnie and Donnie from the left and the right here in our beloved Shangri-La. You know, we are, Don, now come on now. You righties are always talking about we are the citadel of liberalism and fairness and et cetera, right?
Yeah, well, that's what they say. Minnesota Knights. I mean, that's what they say.
Okay. By the way, it looks like the very astute and studious Congress of the United States have come to their senses. Maybe they've been taking some Ritalin or whatever it is. Looks like we're going to save the nation at least until the 15th of January. Looks like we're going to get things, well, not we, I mean they are going to get things straightened around. The Senate apparently voted about, what, an hour ago. We're Central Daylight Time. It looks like about an hour ago the Senate passed a number of resolutions and et cetera, which will get the government back open, will increase the debt limit so we can print more money. And then our negotiations between the respective committees of the House and the Senate will begin negotiations, allegedly, on any number of things, including the budget. Though we will continue to see significant cuts in the budgets and in a lot of programs, particularly social programs. We just are at a point here, and I hate to say it as the left, but where, you know, the very young and the very old are really not crucial to the continuation of prosperity in America, unless you're, you know, part of the 1%, 2% group of Americans, because they're going to be continuing to cut programs that you know, help the poor, you know what I mean? Yeah, don't you guys on the right just kind of wish that the poor and would just kind of go away and disappear? I mean, come on now.
Oh, you know, I mean, me personally, I don't wish that on anybody. But, you know, we have to understand that we're being played by both sides of this political facade. The game is similar to me, the good cop, bad cop in a police interrogation role. And the main objective is to fool us and make us think that one side cares and the other side doesn't. And so this whole shutdown is just really strange. And I mean, you have these the right zealots, which I have to call them that because they're out of their rabbit-ass minds. I've read some of the comments and some of the stories they put out, and it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to even shut down the government, number one.
Now, well, now let me cut in because it kind of laid that as a trap for my friend on the right.
Okay.
Tell me what you really – we've never talked about him. In fact, I noticed we really haven't mentioned his name over the last number of weeks. What do you guys on the right really feel about the new ecumenical disciple Ted Cruz, the senator for Texas? I mean, come on now. Patron saint, Don? I mean, that's going to carry you into 2016 and help you regain the presidency after they get rid of this black guy in the White House? I mean, you know, talk to me a little bit about how you guys on the right think about Teddy Cruz, Canadian, by the way.
Ted Cruz has emerged as the golden child, to say the least, but there's still a problem, Mr. Edwards, and I'm a realist in the Republican Party. And I look at things about who can win and could not win. Ted Cruz could not beat Hillary Clinton. Ted Cruz could not beat a ticket of even Michelle Obama and Hillary Clinton. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, this guy has a good PR wheel turning for him now, but he's not the one. But you have those on the right that, okay, this is the godsend, this is the guy. It's always a white guy in a suit, okay, that's going to do this and that for the Republican Party. And the Republicans, they don't understand they've lost the Hispanics, the Asians, the blacks, the Somalis, and they have just a little stagnant group of Caucasians that are ranting for them all the time. But the thing is, if the party doesn't change and get like people like McCain out of there in leadership and kind of bypass Cruz all the way, you're still going to get here's what I'm trying to say. This shutdown was not a good image or not a good look for the Republican Party of America. It put the nail in their coffin. It didn't hammer it all the way shut, but it put the nail in a couple of hits where it's standing in their coffin. Where 2016, this is something that any presidential candidate on the left can bring up and win support. Yeah, you're right. They did do it, but he'll win support or she'll win support from people on the right and people on the left when talking about
I'd like to think middle of the rollers, known and identified sometimes as independents, whatever that means. But, you know, I noticed, like I said, I noticed that, you know, you guys on the right have not really, you know, dissected Ted Cruz, Senator Cruz. We'll at least give him the respect that they do not give President Barack Obama when they talk about Obama and Obamacare and all that. And it's not Obamacare. That's a phrase that they coined. But anyways, I just kind of wanted to, you know, probe and prod you guys on the right a little bit with respect to Ted Cruz, because I guess I and others on the left see him as, quote-unquote, the golden child, you know, anointed in heaven, if you will, to lead us, well, some of us, or some, into the promised land. I'm not sure what that promised land looks like if you're a black American or a person of color, but I just kind of wondered, what we should expect over the next 3 years from him, as he certainly positions himself to be a, you know, serious contender, at least in the early polls, to be nominated by the Republican Party. Now, do you think that Ted Cruz will possibly try to lead a rebellion to finally, for only the second time in the history of the Republic, move us towards a significant and functional third party? I mean, do you think that Teddy Cruz has got the wherewithal to shape the Tea Party into, at long last, the third party that many Americans desperately have wanted since way back in the 1820s?
Yeah, because, you know, I think you're absolutely right, because now he has the senator from New Hampshire, Kelly, I want to say Ayotte.
Woman. Kind of like
Michelle Bachman.
Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. See, what Cruz has done, he's started infighting, public infighting between the rhinos and the Tea Partiers. And, okay. and so you have this public infighting, and it's crazy because, you know, he could legitimately take out and do what he needs to do and start a third party. But also, we got to start watching the Ron Paul people because they're actually getting ready to move on the Republicans altogether. I mean, the Ron Paul libertarians, they like yellow, red, black, and white. It doesn't make a difference, you know, as long as, you know, we legalize marijuana and, you know, we stop putting people in jail over petty crap and wasting taxpayers' money, let's do the damn thing. So
now we're talking about the father of Rand Paul, the junior senator out of the state of Kentucky, if you will. So the Paul family, you see them on the abyss, on the crest of possibly being the catalyst for a third party here in the United States?
Yeah, I think not only a third party, but I see Cruz doing the third party and them doing the other party, because there's going to have to be some serious decisions made, Mr. Edwards, for the Republican Party of America and the Republican Party here locally in the Twin Cities, or state of Minnesota, because they are not winning elections. They are not producing winners. They are not producing people that are popular with the
But Don, I have to say from the left, but boy, can they raise money. Oh, but they've got the Koch brothers and Walmarts and people like that, right?
Democrats actually can raise money, too. I mean, they have all the Hollywood stars, all the, you know, the dripping wet liberals out there that, you know, can put, you know, whatever they need to put there and raise some money. I mean, when Obama was running in 2012, I mean, all he had to do was put out an email with a video and raise a few million dollars.
Well, that's why, you know, Don, I mean, that's why he won by 5 million votes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, irrespective of all the efforts. I mean, I just think in terms of a program, you know, a year ago, I mean, this time a year ago, we were, you know, talking about Barack Obama as the gorilla, the monkey man, the non-American, the birther. I heard a statement made by a contender, pretender, who talked about that Obama has psychological problems because his daddy, you know, abandoned him, his mother gave him up to his grandparents, and so they're really trying to get back to that, you know, kind of foul, inflammatory kinds of attacks on the president of the United States. But anyways, I kind of drifted off from, because I really like the discussion about a third, even a fourth party, because, you know, for those that have not followed the history of this republic, you know, we've not had that since the Whigs made the mistake of allowing significant splintering to take place within the Whig Party, which that splinter group became the Republicans that we know today, right? And with the exception of Teddy Roosevelt's Bull Party that lasted for, you know, maybe a number of months, I mean, we've only really had three political parties in this country that have held constitutional power, the Democrats, you know, and the Whigs, and then, of course, the Republicans, which were a spinoff of the Whigs. But I'm always interested on what you guys on the right feel about the need to expand, kind of give us that parliamentary form of government, like France and Germany and the European countries. Three or four, five dominant parties where you have to do coalition building, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now,
go ahead, please.
Do you think we really have the ability within our political institutions to do, you know, real coalition building politically?
No, not at all. There's craziness going on, and you know, Mr. Jones, I was talking to someone about this a few days ago. We were talking about 2008 and 2012 elections and how America only sees the Republican and the Democrat debating in these debates. We don't see the independent. We don't see the Green Party. We don't see the Libertarian candidate. And that's something that, you know, this gentleman I was talking to is that we need to change that. We need to see all these parties represented, you know, and to hear what they have to say and not just give the two parties so much time where you think that all the people
think that you're absolutely on point, and whoever the gentleman was that you were talking with, I've advocated that since the days of the 1960 uprisings and insurgency and et cetera, that, you know, we certainly need more than two parties. Because it's so easy, particularly as African-Americans, to push us out and away from the so-called predominant political parties, if you will. I just don't know if the third and fourth parties, you know, in existence, I don't know if that the money is there for them. I'm not sure, as an example, that the Koch brothers would pour their money into a real Tea Party. They're shrewd enough business people, captains of industry, if you will, to know how the game is to be played. But, you know, it's fascinating. And again, the number is 347-426-3904. Again, 347-426-3904. This is the Donnie Ronnie program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Say, you know, we're moving into the 40-minute mark. Look, prosperity is here. We started the program off. Don, you've got some observations about what's going on with the billion-dollar Viking Stadium. I understand that we're going to sing that song from Good Times. I understand the Good Times are rolling. Are things that great for our community? And give me an estimation of how many African-Americans do you think are job ready as we speak to go to work on the stadium tomorrow?
Well, Mr. Evers, we have to go back to the meeting that we had, you and I, downtown in the Metrodome with Michelle Kim Hagelin, Ted Mondale, Wanda Kirkpatrick, the communication person, Jennifer.
Yeah, little Aaron. And the PR, right.
And the PR person, yeah. Where, you know, we crunched some numbers based off the 7,500 people that will be working on the stadium, or that are estimated to be working on the stadium. By a local, I think Mortensen did it, if I wasn't mistaken. I want to say Mortensen.
Don. Mortensen was allowed to, in anticipation that Mortensen was going to get the contract as the managing contractor. Mortensen was allowed to put together what was called a prototype. And you know, I still laugh about that because it was quite clear that that was to position Mortensen to become the construction manager, which of course they are, with all the problems that come with it. But the numbers that Mr. Allen is talking about were numbers that were discussed across the table that beautiful fall day, September of 2012. Go ahead, Doc.
You got something right there
on your computer.
Yeah, I have it right here in Studio A, and we just need to break this down, Mr. Edwards, because at that particular point when we met with them, they were trying to get an equity plan together. And I went to and I requested some information from the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, which they did send me. And based on the 7,500 people, now, mind you, Mr. Edwards and our listening audience, international and domestic and local here, there's not going to be 7,500 people working every day on the stadium. This is throughout.
Only 1,500. Right. Go ahead.
Only 1,500. Kind of throughout the tenure. So after looking at the numbers carefully, Mr. Lewis King, we determined, and crunching the numbers and using some really interesting formulas that maybe 112 minorities will be hired. But in that 112 minorities, that includes women, white women. That includes skilled Hispanics, skilled Asians, skilled African Americans, and skilled Somalis, if any.
Native Americans,
And Native Americans. And so with that said, there's no real guarantee here that any number from the state, from the Commissioner Kevin Lindsay of Human Rights, his 32% number is BS, basically. Because it's not going to happen on the simple – if you look – I'm looking at the contract now between Summit Academy, OIC, and Mr.
You mean Indian OIC, don't you?
No. I mean Summit Academy. Required services for
the facility. That's right. We went over that last week, didn't we?
And
we determined that that language which talked in terms – and this is for those that – like to immediately examine the authenticity of what's being said. We're talking section 17473J.12 under employment. And we're specifically talking for our good friends who are tuned in at lines 19.6 through 19.11 on the document known as the legislation. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Yeah, and I want to make this personally clear to Mr. Lewis King and Alex Tittle and the people down there at the stadium that, you know, there are some of us in the black community that read well, that stay in our lanes. And
oh, yeah, always stay in my lane. Yeah, hell yeah.
Exhibit A, Mr. Edwards, Exhibit A of the required services for the professional service agreement between the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority and Summit Academy OIC. The general scope of work, the second paragraph says, creation, operation, and administration of training activities directed only toward the anticipated need of additional minority women and veteran workforce participation under the authority's equity plan, workforce program, and veterans inclusion program, follow receipt of updated M.A. Mortensen workforce data and projections. This is not saying that any African-American, Somali, Asian, Hispanic, Native American will work. They gave $700 to this organization for an
We don't want to put them on the court, but
that much money for anticipated need. This is like, Mr. Edwards, that's like me and you uncover a big news story, right? And the principals of the news story come up to us and say, you know, we're to give you X amount of dollars to not say the whole thing. You can say some of it, but not the whole thing. And we take it.
Wait, see, here's where I'm a little confused, and I know there were secret meetings today in St. Paul, apparently pre-meetings for a meeting that is going to have to be held this coming Friday because the Sports Facility Authority is insisting on a acceleration, you know, after they gave the money up. Now, at line 19.1, of 473J.12. This is a language that always I've tried to get a feel for, but, you know, I assume that the director of equity, that is Mr. Tittle, who, if I'm not mistaken, was at the closed meeting this afternoon in the saintly city of St. Paul. Here's what bothers me, Don, and phone lines are open, you know, for those that have their observation and opinion. It says, the authority shall make every effort to employ and cost the NFL team, the construction manager, and other subcontractors, vendors, and concessioners to employ women and members of minority communities when hiring. In addition, the authority shall contract with an employment assistance firm. Now, that is the group that will be meeting on Friday, and their subcommittee met this afternoon in St. Paul.
We have a caller, Mr. Edwards. We have a caller.
Oh, do we have a caller? Okay, go ahead. Let's get the caller in.
I think we caught a big one. Let's see here. hello, caller. You're live on the air. Who are we speaking with?
This is Jamon Nelson. How are you guys this evening?
Hey, Mr.
Fine, brother
Nelson.
What can we do for you?
I missed you guys over the last couple of weeks. I've been busy. But, you know, as usual, you guys always keep the community abreast with the important news. I appreciate that.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the risk of sounding like a grumpy old man at my ripe age of 35, are we surprised that there are no minorities guaranteed jobs on this project? You know,
That's a dangerous question. And you know, well, Brother Nelson, it has some bases of history too, because I guess, you know, little Don and little Ron are not surprised, but we, you know, as either both from the left and right, we are, you know, required to try to be objective, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
But boy, you bring forward a piece of factual context and et cetera, and that is, with the exception of the building of the Metrodome in 1980 and 81, it's never really happened, and so. But you want to be positive, because here's the problem that I can only speak for myself from the left, my associate from the right, though he and I have spoken and concurred. We are in a tight situation here, because so many of our people in the African-American community had been left with great anticipation and anxiety that they were going to be allowed to achieve opportunity, slash employment contracts and et cetera. Last week we talked in terms of, for a number of months, the rumors abounded in the, you know, the right part of the African-American community, I mean those that are the supreme thinkers and negotiators, that there was going to be actually the actual control or certainly a significant participation in the concessions. And then it didn't happen. All concessions had been given to the Wilf Group, the owners of the Minnesota Vikings. And no one can explain that. And so I just kind of wanted in a long-winded way to respond to what you said, because I think that you're getting ready to pull back some parts of the onion. But go right ahead, sir.
Go ahead, Mr. Nelson, and we have another caller as soon as you get done. We need you to keep listening.
Well, when you look at that, when you think about minorities, there has to be laws enacted to guarantee minorities different jobs. You know, when you look at Supreme Court trying to get rid of affirmative action.
In the state of Michigan, thank you.
In the state of Michigan, and who knows here? We know that this is a Democratic state here in Minnesota, but who knows here, too? When you think about minorities have to be, there have to be laws to be enacted for to give minorities jobs, it's ridiculous. And then sometimes the backdoor way they go about giving minority jobs, like you said, Don, when you think about it, you have to, when they say minorities, that could be women. You know, that could be anything. That word is such a slippery slope. And it's also amazing when you think about the owners of this team being Jewish. Am I mistaken? Aren't they Jewish?
They are Jewish. In fact, they are Holocaust survivors.
When you think about that, you cannot fathom the fact that minority ownership at this day and age would not guarantee other minorities jobs.
I need to interject there from the right, okay? And a caller, stand by. I see your number up there. We're going to get right with you, but I need to add this in. I think, Mr. Edwards and Mr. Nelson, I think it's total asinine that you have to guarantee minorities jobs, okay,
absolutely,
on any project. Because back in the – I don't have the exact date, but CFR 49 Part 26 – was a regulation written into the federal law of any public works project anywhere, from MnDOT to this stadium, that said that you have to make it happen. You have to get people on these jobs. But what it's turned into is these special interest groups, you know, that go run in, you know, with their skirts up, And want what they can get real quick and run out and think they've won something, to think that they've accomplished something. That's why Malcolm X said back in his day, he says, yeah, we're going to be marching 50 years from now. And he's right.
Absolutely.
Because we're marching right into the poorhouse, folks.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Nelson? We want to get these callers that are holding.
I'll say this, and I don't want to alienate any of the callers. I think you're right, Don, the fact that you shouldn't have to guarantee minorities anything, you know, it should be given on their merit. We should be looking for African-American, Asian-American, Native Americans that can do the job and hire them on the basis that they can do the work. But the fact is, that isn't how it happens. And so the fact that we have to make laws that forces you to guarantee minorities jobs is ridiculous. And I will forever be ashamed of this ownership because of the fact that they haven't reached out and said something publicly because they're worried about the public relations. If I'm going to spend my money to watch a terrible team, I want ownership that's going to back up my community and other minority communities when jobs are needed. These are jobs that, 1,500 did you say? If you give only some of that to African Americans,
no, 7,500 for the total workforce, but each and every day from the point in time that they begin the actual construction in hopefully March of next year until July of 2016, there will be an average of 1,500 workers on site.
Wow. And I would hope that when you drive down there, you can see not only black faces, but brown faces and faces that are qualified to be there and not because they were made to.
All right. Thank you, caller. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, we got another caller.
All right, we have another caller. Bring him in.
Yeah. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Hello, sir. Ma'am.
Hello?
Yeah, you're live on the air.
Go ahead. You're on.
Oh, yes. My name is Jennifer, and I just had a question in regard to the 9-year-old young man.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was trying to figure out how did it tie into him being suspended from school as the incident that occurred.
Well, because he's a juvenile, you know, there is a legal requirement that that information is confidential. But, you know, certainly since the incident and the flight and et cetera, you know, certainly information has been leaked. It appeared that he had been having problems in the school district for quite some time. And when you receive a 5-day suspension, it means that you are a repeat offender, whatever those offenses are. I would imagine it was probably a combination of disobedience, disobeying orders, and probably, unfortunately, a 5-day suspension, physical combat.
Oh, okay. So the young man was already suspended from school before the incident occurred. Am I correct?
Yes. In fact, his father said in a copyrighted story in the Minneapolis Star Tribune that the son had been going out. The father apparently is some kind of bus driver. That's interesting. And that the son had been going out to work with him because they had no one to really, you know, watch him at home. So he was going out with his father. That's where the information came from, the father, that the 9-year-old child was under at least week-long suspension. That's how that information emerged. And then, of course, the media grabbed at it, and they ultimately also accessed the police reports of the stolen vehicle, the accident that he had, because the little fellow was able to drive a truck in which he hit a Edina squad car, causing almost $6,000 in damage. But he had done something like that before, and so, unfortunately, he had an habitual record. And, by the way, that's one of the things that was positioned in the petition filed by the county attorney here with the juvenile court, that he was displaying. He was displaying an habitual history of dangerous conduct.
Oh, okay.
Habitual. Yeah, it called him an habitual, yeah.
Okay, so I was just wondering, was there any kind of interventions done through the school system to help this young man?
The father, again, in a statement along with the mother to the authorities, and in his own words while appearing on camera over a week ago, indicated that he requested intervention from both private and public sources, if you will, institutions, et cetera, and no one would help him. It appears that the petition that was reviewed by the judge this morning in Hennepin County Juvenile Court does not really indicate a significant implementation of intervention, which then raises a serious question about, you know, did the folks really care what was happening with this child? And these problems had been going on for quite some time because the sealed record would appear to indicate that he started displaying, unfortunately, problems as early as 5 years old.
Okay, I understand. And how is Mad Dads helping the young man or the family?
You know, I'm not sure, but it's now out of Mad Dad's hands because the 9-year-old African-American child is now under the custody and control of the state. And so I don't know what Mad Dad. I hope that Mad Dad's helped to get an attorney. My associate to the right, Mr. Allen, has indicated that he is aware and cognizant of who the attorney is, and that this is an individual that does have a passion, if you will, to defend, quote-unquote, his client. And I hope that's correct. But as it pertains to Mad Dads, actually, you know, other than raising some money for legal fees and et cetera, Mad Dads actually has no standing, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just was curious, since it made national news and about Mad Dads, I was just wondering.
Oh, yeah, Mad Dads got a lot of play.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Again, that number, 347-426-3904. 347-426-3904. We've basically been talking about the 9-year-old African-American child who booked a flight without reservations on the Delta Airlines to Las Vegas, Nevada, and has now become the centerpiece of national and actually world news, and who unfortunately was placed under the custody and control of the state of Minnesota this morning as an outgrowth of a petition filed by the Hennepin County attorney. And also we've been talking in terms of the prosperity that we are supposedly looking forward to as it pertains to economic opportunities on the People's Stadium, right, Don?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. I thought that our previous caller, Mr. Nelson, and by the way, I thought that those were a couple of keen observations and questions by the last caller. We appreciate particularly when mothers, if you will, the heart and soul of the black community, raised some questions about the role of any number of individuals. See, I kind of got the feeling, Don, as I have listened to both public and private internal discussions, that the family did try to reach out to some of our organizations and et cetera, and there just wasn't a response, and that they also tried to reach out to the authorities. In fact, I would be interested to see what Superintendent Bernadier Johnson has to say about how the Minneapolis Public Schools, and that was a heck of a question posed by the last caller, what kind of intervention did the Minneapolis Public Schools offer this African-American family for the last 3 years or so? Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because, I understand the game that they play, and that is because he is a juvenile and because of the law and the demand for confidentiality, that they can play the game now of saying they're not going to address it. But you and I know that they have been, the school district has been in consultation with the county attorney and have shared information, evaluations, and et cetera with them, which helped the judge this morning make a determination relevant to custodial control and authority as it pertains to this 9-year-old child. So, but I'd kind of like to know, you know, just what it was that the school district saw that should have caused them to have initiated intervention. See, no one's talked about that. There hasn't been a single statement in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Johannesburg Times, which talks in terms of the responsibility of the school district, because it's quite clear that this child was going to school and every attempt was being made by the family to keep him in school. But there's been no question other than the question by this caller on this program who talked about intervention. You know. So, anyways, what else do we have, Don? Because we don't want to, and that phone line is open because we're just, you know, ourselves trying to get a feel for how successful everything will be. Oh, by the way, the special legislative commission that is being co-chaired by one of our black senators, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, is one of the co-chairs of this 12-member commission comprised of 12 members of the legislature, 6 from the House, 6 from the Senate. You know, I really am making an appeal, and I have done it on my television program that airs here on Sunday, that there should be a public airing of what the heck, Don, happened. You know, I know that you've been a critic of those of us of the left, that we may not be the best negotiators that the world has ever seen, but these were all, you know, just like when they came together this afternoon over there in St. Paul at the Golden whatever, Golden Times. I mean, these are the best about the best, aren't they? I mean, these are our top negotiators, facilitators, thinkers, processors, and et cetera. I mean, it's quite clear that the Vikings beat them to their knees on the issue of the training, even the training money, but specifically the whole thing about the concessions, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, go ahead. Sorry.
No, and I'm just trying to, you know, I'm just throwing it out there. I'm, you know, hoping that we get some calls from some of the top thinkers, if you will, because they certainly, when they're amongst themselves, talk in terms of how prolific and et cetera they are. I just would like to know what the heck happened in that 4 or 5 month period that negotiations supposedly were going on in which our leadership, if you will, and that'll be some of the group that will be meeting Friday to split up the $800,000, oops, and I guess assign duties and responsibilities to each other. But I'm just trying to figure out how in the heck they just got beat down. And why did, you know, Ted Mondale and the Sports Facility Authority and the big, powerful white law firm of Dorsey and Whitney did not reach out to help our leaders? I mean, maybe you've got an answer from the right, Don. Maybe help me out on this one. I mean, what the
hell? You know what? You know, I don't have an answer really about this because they needed some help, and the right would have been able to help them, you know, a little bit, I think, Mr. Edwards. But, you know, Edwards, I have to tell you this because I think it's pretty funny. I emailed a copy of this agreement to the president of the National Urban League, Mr. Mark Morial. And
okay.
I'm in Studio A checking my email while you were talking, and I have an email back from him, and this is going to be the Ron and Don Show exclusive. He said,
okay.
after careful reading of the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority agreement between Summit Academy and the MSFA here that he has, I am concerned.
This is Mark Morial saying
Morial
that in a communique to us a couple hours ago. I'll go right ahead, Don.
Yes. He cites in this email sent to I Independent Business News Network on behalf of the Ron and Don Show, he cites the paragraph that I just cited and also cites paragraph 4 in Exhibit A. And I read Exhibit A, paragraph 3, and I really think I need to read Exhibit A, paragraph 4, Mr. Edwards.
Okay.
And then I'm going to read the rest of the stuff he wrote. He said, the authority intends to authorize the contractor to engage in compensationable outreach and training efforts by periodically submitting specific requests to the contractor based on information received and requests made from M.A. Mortensen. The request will identify how many individuals the authority requests. And right there he has the authority request, question mark, by trade for placement after appropriate outreach or training to qualify an individual for employment. Another question mark, and in parentheses, to qualify an individual for employment on the project. Okay, and then last sentence says, the request for service also will identify a date, completion date, by which time each request individual must be placed following outreach and training. Then he has three question marks after that paragraph, which to me is saying that, you know, this was basically a shakedown kind of deal, and it's not what it seems to be. But, you know, we had talked about it earlier, Mr. Edwards, that the Minneapolis Urban League was actually written in the legislation, and
yes,
Indian OIC and Sabathany. And I guess the biggest question that I have is, how does Summit Academy rate in this? And
I have no idea, but again, for the purpose of authenticating what my associate from the right has just said, at line 19.7 and 19.8 under section 473J.12 under employment, section 17, it identifies Minneapolis Urban League, Sabathany, American Indian OIC, youth building organizations, and other such organizations. Now, earlier, before we received that first call, this entire situation of a employment assistance entity, all right, and this is at, for our friends out there, this is at line 19.4. In addition, the authority shall contract with an employment assistance firm, preferably minority-owned or owned by a disabled individual. You see, Mr. Allen, I didn't want to say anything last week to our associates and friends, if you will, but there's already been, and I hope that Senator Champion takes note, but specifically Senator Hayden, who has insisted a greater clarity. You see, there's already been a violation of the law. This is for our friends listening in. The legislation says a owned business, a for-profit. I read this language again for those that are listening to this program.
It talks in terms of a employment assistance firm, preferably minority-owned or owned by a disabled individual or a woman, to create an employment program to recruit, hire, and retain minorities for the stadium facility. Well, this group that was awarded the $700,000 contract is not a business entity. They are a group of separate organizations, and you have been in contact with the parent authority of the Minneapolis Urban League, and that is the National Urban League, which has all fiduciary control over its affiliates. And I would like someone to explain to me over the next couple of weeks, and this is a question that certainly will be posed publicly to the Sports Facility Authority, how did that language get aborted, if you will? Are you following me, Mr. Allen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't, you're not really supposed to, it takes a legislative action, if I'm not mistaken, to circumvent that language.
That is correct, sir. And I have known that since the summer of this year when I was told, but I made inquiry in a number of different ways. And was I made to understand that this group of 15, which you have read the RFP and et cetera, if they had incorporated. Now, if we are told and calls are made over the next number of hours, 24, 36 hours, that this group, some of their business leadership met in St. Paul this morning, if they have incorporated and are a Minnesota corporation and et cetera, well, then I guess the language and requirement of the legislation is in place, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know and we see, I purposely kept saying last week employment assistance because I wanted to make sure that everyone understood that was consistent with the language. An employment assistance firm, okay, preferably, and I repeat it again, I don't want to be totally redundant. But, Mr. Allen, my research and the research of my associates clearly indicates that this is not a corporation. And so I'm just wondering, and I raise this question now to the co-chair of the Legislative Commission, who does have the authority to raise inquiry of how this part of the legislation was circumvented. Now, you know, we can't depend on the Minneapolis Star Tribune or none of them folks to do it, but exclusively it's been done here on the Donnie and Ronnie show, okay? Want you to follow that closely. And the phone lines are open in case anyone has a challenge or a question. 347-426-3904, 347-426-3904. We maintain that a serious portion of the legislative act entitled at 473J.12 employment, section 17, hiring and recruitment, has been violated, Mr. Allen.
Yes, ma'am.
And I think that the distribution of $700,000 of taxpayers' money was illegally released to a group of individuals that do not have legal standing based on the law.
Yes. Yes.
Okay?
Yeah. That's it. That's
now,
it right
if
there.
If anyone certainly wants to clash and cross swords with us, hey, I have no problem with that. Maybe there's an explanation. Maybe there was an amendment in the last legislative session, the session of 2013. But I got to tell you, I had my people go in and do the research. I did the research myself. There is no documentation in the clerk's office of the either the Senate or the House that such a resolution ever came to the floor. I mean,
exactly.
They're serious, Don. I mean, I know they want to dismiss, you know, what the black guys kind of say and et cetera, but this is a serious breach of law. Very serious. Okay? And I, you know, technically, this group does not have any liability features because technically, you know, they are not a corporation and they are not, quote, unquote, owned by, they have minorities participating, but they're not owned by by quote, unquote, a minority group. In fact, I'm not sure that they have even constituted a nonprofit board of directors. And by the way, I have to say this now. This is one of the things that the Viking negotiators saw right off the bat, and one of the reasons that they would not negotiate on the concession issue, using the violation of the employment firm. Oh, by the way, for our friends, the other problem that emerged that these guys didn't know about is that, did you know, Don, there's a collective bargaining agreement as it pertains to the concession workers?
Uh-huh.
That they have first priority and first preference for all jobs on the new stadium.
Wow.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah, they have first call, okay? And I would refer to subsection 2 at line 19.14, other required agreements, and it starts with the NFL team or the authority shall give blah, 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 concession workers and et cetera. But the key is that there is a collective bargaining agreement. And apparently our negotiators from my African-American community did not know, understand, or recognize that. And so when they started talking about getting a piece of the concession action, that's the reason, Mr. Allen, and you were the one that really helped uncover that, that a specific all-white food service firm was given the contract over 3 weeks ago.
They've been doing it for years at all these places, you know. And Mr. Edwards, I did hear something else. There's a company that lets nonprofits go into, like, the Metrodome, I'm thinking of the name while I'm saying this because it will come to me, the Target Center, the XL Center. And they will let you have a concession stand to raise money for your nonprofit. It's called CenterPoint.
Yeah.
And now these people were suggesting, well, hey, if y'all want to make some money, you can do this. And they turn their nose up at it.
Yeah. Okay?
That was their only
option. That's what I understand also, sir. That's what I understand. That's why I appeal to State Senator Bobby Joe Champion, co-chair of the Special Commission, designated by the Legislative Act to make any inquiry necessary that really we need to know what the heck happened in those negotiations. I mean, how did we just get wiped out as a community?
Yeah, from the beginning to end, you know, it's just like $700,000 on a potential, you know, $1.5 billion public works project. And we're sitting there looking at, like, you know, they're going to go in and someone's going to negotiate for the whole community. Now, again, Mr. Edwards, we got to let people know these people do not speak for the whole community. They don't speak for the professionals in this community. They don't speak for the poor in this community. They're just speaking for themselves. So they go in there and they grab this money and they sell out the whole community. And, you know, 700 grand, who's going to work with 700, between 15 organizations? What, 50,000 organizations, if that?
Average, I think last week we computed about $53,000 per organization. I got to tell you, the president of the Minneapolis Urban League in a meeting this morning indicated his concern that the Urban League wasn't going to get their fair share out of that $7 million. Well, actually, $8
million. Of course not.
That to be with the additional $100,000. Did I say meet? I'm sorry, $700,000. You know, we're talking about a $1 billion project, and sometimes we just psychologically slip up and talk in millions. This is just a little, you know, a couple $100,000. But Scott Gray has clearly indicated in a closed meeting, a secret meeting in St. Paul this afternoon, that he is concerned that his organization doesn't get its fair share.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're down, Mr. Edwards, to about a minute, but we can keep rolling here until the 30-second mark. But we just, you know, also, you know, the show was titled, you know, if you kill a black man, you get a purple heart here in the Twin Cities. And, you know, the two police officers that were involved with the Terrence Franklin murder, homicide.
The two officers that were shot and wounded, right?
Everybody,
I think everybody in the African-American community and other communities know that those two officers shot each other, you know. But they got purple hearts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know how that really works, but obviously it did, you know. And so
that also, you know, places an additional burden on the civil case that has been filed by the attorney for the Franklin family. But, hey, this is the way we operate here in Minneapolis, man. You know, the land of sugar and honey. We're at the headwaters of the Mississippi River.
All right.
Well, all right, Don, it's been a pleasure, homie.
Okay. Yep.
All right. Later. Ron Edwards from the left, Don Allen from the right.